This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Krajina FM is a radio station broadcasting in Kyiv, playing Ukrainian language rock and pop music. But when Russia invaded Ukraine, Krajina FM began broadcasting news about the war. It gave out logistical information to aid the war effort and collect supplies. They've even been doing things like telling stories for kids during the stressful nights of wartime. As Kyiv came under the heavier and heavier assault from Russian forces, Krajina FM relocated its production facilities outside the city. But they're still broadcasting in Kyiv and around the country.
On the second day when we came here, we went to the local military station. We went to the local military station and we said, "We are here. What do you want us to do?" And they asked us what you can do. And we said, "We can do radio." And they said, "Go and make radio."
І чим ваші ж мешканці можуть вам допомогти? Разом до перемоги.
Країна ФМ. Радіо національного спротиву.
Contributor Nicholas Niarchos visited the station just a few days ago.
What does Radio Nacionalistovo Sprotivo mean?
Radio station of national resistance.
So this is the radio station of national resistance.
That's what we call it. I mean, we decided, me and Roman, in the morning, we have to do something. We cannot just say we are Krajina FM and we are playing only Ukrainian music. No, not now. You should make your stance public and your attitude public. That's the general idea.
Nick, who were you talking with there, and where were you?
So I can't say exactly where we were for security reasons. We were in a small village a couple of hours south of Lviv in the Carpathian Mountains in a makeshift radio station that had been set up in an accountant's office. I spoke with Bogdan Balchavetsky and Roman Davidov. They ended up in this town to which they had absolutely no connection, almost at random, after they fled Kyiv.
When we came back to our senses, we started discussing who was doing what at the moment when Putin started bombing. I remember I woke up at 2:30 from a terrible nightmare, just terrible, like Stanley Kubrick movie nightmare. I mean, top grade nightmare. It's graphic, absolutely. I woke up, and then at 5, I'm browsing, and I click constantly. Let's reload. And the same moment I see this red line that Putin is addressing the nation, I start hearing bombing in Kyiv. And I just get the bags, and my family was asleep in the next room, and I'm starting packing the bags, throwing everything. I'm putting in anything I see, and we move. So we left Kyiv. Everyone was scattered for 2 or 3 days. And Roman was in a different part of the country. I'm a general manager, and he's a program director. And the voice of the station, actually.
Друзі, як ви знаєте, ми на Країні ФМ намагаємось через наш ефір допомогти розповсюджувати інформацію про потреби наших воїнів, територіальної оборони у всіх містах, де нас
And we were lucky, extremely lucky, that Roman, from some of the of his remotes, he had the microphone in a trunk.
And I record news. In the first day, it was just news, of course.
And in 3 or 4 days, we decided that we should meet up somewhere. By that moment, it was very intense in terms of bombing and shelling and everything. And by chance, by pure chance, we found this place because that was the only place vacant. Yeah. They had a room where we could stay up. And then we set up a small studio here.
Do you mind if I just record you as you record this? Yes.
Minister of Закордонних справ Франції Жан-Ів Ле Дюран. Міністр закордонних справ Франції Жан-Ів Ле Дюран. Міністр закордонних справ Франції Жан-Ів Ле Дюран анонсував новий пакет санкцій ЄС.
While I was there, Роман read a newsbreak for the station.
Вірпені, російські окупанти розстріляли кореспондента американського видання «Нью-Йорк Таймс» Брента Рено. Інший журналіст отримав поранення.
One of those announcements was that a New York Times journalist was shot.
Yes, in Vierpine, it's near Kiev.
After the evacuation of the people, they passed the checkpoint and they've been shot and they've been hospitalized, right?
One of them
and another one?
Killed.
So that was the day that the news broke about Brent Reno, one of the journalists who was killed covering the war. And initially it was thought that he was a New York Times journalist, but it actually transpired that he was working for Time magazine.
Nick, what are the mechanics of this operation? How is it all working?
So Bogdan and Roman had this little studio in the village. And it's in a little wooden room, almost like a log cabin, where they record news and they record promos. And then they send it out to people doing production in other cities. And those people get the signal to the broadcast towers. So like everyone else these days, they're relying on the web.
Nick, do you have any idea how many radio stations this is being broadcast on?
So Bogdan guessed that at the moment it's being broadcast on just over 20, but he really has no idea how many they are broadcasting on at the moment. Normally it's around 28 stations. Have you heard from listeners? Have you heard from people telling you?
They text us. We don't have the setup to take in calls, but they text us. And of course they like it. Of course they like it.
So your programming still involves a lot of music, or?
It's music, news, and short news, and mostly announcements on what is needed right now in a very specific place. That's, we decided, would be our angle. Right now, right here, in this place. I'll give you an example. Like yesterday, the guys from military, from Kyiv military called. And they said, listen, we know you are broadcasting, and we need like about 100 laptops because the warehouse was damaged or something happened. We need about 100. That's a lot. I mean, 100 laptops. And we made an announcement, and we were playing this announcement like every 15 minutes or 20 minutes.
Для Збройних сил України шукаємо ноутбуки, які далі будуть розподілятися по військовій.
And they call back in 2 hours and saying, stop it, we've gotten. People brought it in. What other reason do you need in this moment?
In addition to laptops, the station has put out calls to collect helmets, to collect sleeping bags, nails, gloves, thermoses, even pots to transport food to the front. And what about your families? Where are your families?
Our families were with us. And like Roman's family moved out to Europe this morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. And my family moved out to Europe like 2 days ago. Because it's complicated. It's complicated. I have a wife and I have a kid. Roman also has wife, kid and a dog.
Okay. How do you feel about your families having left?
Who having left, sir?
Your families.
Do you have a family? You have kid? Do you have wife? Then it means nothing what I tell you. Terrible. Terrible. Like never before. It's not compared to anything in my life. To anything. And I mean, it's complicated. It's better to be by ourselves. It's easier because you don't care. You don't care in a good way. Has everyone eaten? Has everyone slept well? You just send them to safe places. They will take care of themselves and we'll take care of business and ourselves. So that's the setup right now.
Ukraine FM started out as a music station, but as the war has gone on, they've actually evolved.
In the first day, it was just news, of course, because news is most simply with production. Now we make some features with humor. Of course, in the first week, we don't think about some funny. And now it's humor.
Як правильно говорити українською? Українські селяни не запитують, куди летить ворожий гелікоптер. Українські селяни запитують, скільки можна отримати грошей, здавши залишки ворожого гелікоптера на металобрухт. Українська легко. Слава Україні!
So that's a joke about shooting down Russian helicopters. And so they've done pieces that include poetry.
Я хочу, щоб мої гармати його розривали на клапті, щоб тільки шматки і шмати, щоб тільки шмарклі і лапті. Я хочу, щоб моя стула
And fairy tales for children to the evening, because so many children now in shelters and they scared.
Стоїть велике кріслате дерево. І так від вітру аж до землі нагинається, хилитається. Фю, туди гілки, а під деревом хата така стоїть. І він до тої хати пішов, той прямо вітер крутить навколо, він у двері стоїть.
Plus we have recommendation from psychological recommendations. Different types of psychological recommendations, like what to do in shelter, what to tell your kid, what to, how to calm down your kid, how, I mean...
It's not from internet, it's from...
No, it's from a live person who is recording this on her phone, being in a shelter. Then she sends us here, we produce it, and then we put it in there, play it.
Якщо батько чи мати захищає країну, нам треба бути готовими до будь-яких емоцій дитини, до її істерики, крику, благань не йти.
So, the psychologist is talking about caring for children whose parents are fighting in this war. She's giving advice like show affection, show love, listen, and don't contradict what the child says. How many people normally work at the station?
15.
Yeah. And where are all those people now? So it's you, Roman,
and we have two young creatives who are more freelance. They were just in an area. And
in Kyiv, we have a few people who doing some content, some news. In Lutsk, in Poland, it's all our workers, but all of them in other places now. And some of them type text, some of them recording voices, some of them in production do something for production for us. And some of them, it's not our people, but they help to us from Russia.
This type of work, it consumes so much energy because internet is, I shouldn't say this word, internet connection is very bad. It's very bad. It's just touch and go, touch and go, touch and go, touch and go. And you guys know the feeling, right? When you're deciding to trying to upload something and it stops at 98% and says there is no upload and you re-upload, then we might send like an audio piece or audio clip to the production and the guy is not there because he has no internet connection. Then you ring everybody up. Then you should find somebody who has internet connection, send it to him, you send it to him. By that moment, the second guy got the internet connection, then you have to call the third guy to cancel this. I mean, it's chicken farmer disease. It can you know this joke about chicken farmer disease, no? Mm-hmm. And the chicken farmer goes outside and he was about to milk a cow, and then he sees that his chickens are not in place and he goes after the chickens. Then he sees that some pig is out of the cage. He goes after the pig. And at the end of the day, he didn't milk the cow yet because you do a lot of things which interfere into your normal workflow. That's what we do right here. I mean, that's not very efficient in terms of work, but that's all we have right now.
Слава Україні!
На країні ФМ спеціальний серйозно-несерйозний проект «Абетка війни». Вивчаємо новий український алфавіт разом.
I want to stress this out publicly, off the record, on the record, that we are not doing anything heroic. We are just doing what we are doing okay? Like any farmer would do, like any driver would do, like any coffee maker would do. Nothing heroic happens here. By no means, we are still in a lot of luck having what we have right now. In a lot of luck. Thousands of people were not that lucky as we are. So, and I, by no means, we want this to sound like, oh, here are the guys, they managed. We've got off pretty easy, okay? We're just doing what we can under these very, very unusual circumstances.
You can hear Kraina FM on the web, krainafm.ua. Nicholas Niarko spoke with Bogdan Bolchevietsky and Roman Davidov. And you can find Nick's story and much more coverage of the invasion of Ukraine at newyorker.com. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour with more to come. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Now, every year, whatever may be going on in the world, the awards ceremonies celebrate the best that film has to offer. And with apologies to the Oscars, the awards that truly matter are only broadcast right here on the New Yorker Radio Hour. And I am talking about the Brody Awards. The Brodies are unlike all other awards. There are no nominations. No committees, no voting, no statues. They're selected by just one magnificently informed and passionate film critic, The New Yorker's Richard Brody. Richard joins me now along with our colleague, Alexandra Schwartz. Alex writes about film and theater and books and much more. You know, it feels like every year the Oscar nominations tell a story about Hollywood somehow. We remember in 2015 there were the Oscars So White controversy. And last year, the nominations spoke to an industry that was really reeling from the pandemic. Richard, what is the story that you can derive from looking at this year's nominees?
Well, I think the expansion of the Academy to include a younger, more representative membership, a more international membership, has had a significant impact on the kinds of films that get nominated. I would call it truth in nomination, even if the money in Hollywood may be in franchises and superhero films. This year's nominations reflect the kinds of films that people get into the industry to work on.
Now, enough about the Oscars, the hell with them. Let's get down to the real business, the 2022 Brody Awards. So, we'll start with Best Actress in a Leading Role. Alex, the Brody nominees, please.
The nominees are Alana Haim, Licorice Pizza, Tessa Thompson, Passing, Taylor Page, Zola, Kim Min-hee, The Woman Who Ran, and Nicole Kidman, Being the Ricardos. And Richard, the winner is?
The winner is Alana Haim for Licorice Pizza.
He was maybe going to be my boyfriend.
Listen, young lady, you don't bring this idiot to Shabbat dinner here.
Listen, Dad, he's an atheist and an actor, and he's famous.
But he's Jewish.
He was going to take me out of here, Essie. Don't you even look at me. Don't you even look at me. You're always looking at me. What are you doing?
I didn't even say anything.
What are you doing? What are you thinking, huh? I'm Essie. I work for Mom and Dad. I'm perfect. I'm a real estate agent. Alana doesn't have her life together. Alana brings home stupid boyfriends all the time.
I mean,
I knew it. I knew that was what you were thinking. You're always thinking things, you thinker. You thinker. You think things.
That's such a great scene.
God, Richard, why did you make that pick?
I felt like I was watching a new kind of performance altogether. I mean, I think that there was a terrific group of actors this year in this category. There's a long tradition of musicians, Frank Sinatra, Judy Garland, for that matter, this year's Oscar nominee, Will Smith, who became great actors. Alana Haim's performance is simultaneously exact and unstrung. And this is basically screwball comedy rapid and screwball comedy dense dialogue that she's delivering with free physical motion, with extreme precision, and simultaneously an amazing spontaneity.
I think we should say also that in this clip, the family of the character line, Ilana, is played by the actual Haim family, both of her parents, her two sisters who are in a band with her. I mean, the role was literally written for her by Paul Thomas Anderson. Richard, I'm curious about where you see the line between this kind of being and acting when someone is playing a role that is so scripted to them and their personality.
Well, there's a great tradition of this too, whether, you know, Eric von Stroheim or Betty Davis or Orson Welles or John Cassavetes or Jenna Rollins. I mean, actors have always had in great films certain proximity, certain emotional and personal proximity to the role. What's different here is that she goes back and forth. She's performing with her family. By the way, Ilana Haim's mother was Paul Thomas Anderson's art teacher.
Neighbors in the valley. But Richard, when Paul Thomas Anderson was on this show a while back, you know, what do I know? I thought it was a shoo-in that Ilana Haim would be nominated for an Oscar, but she wasn't even nominated. How is that possible?
The kinds of acting that tend to get nominations are impersonation. And look at the actors, the actresses who were in fact nominated. Jessica Chastain, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, biopic. Nicole Kidman, Being the Ricardos, I think it's a great performance, but it's a biopic. Kristen Stewart, Spencer, biopic. Ilana Haim is not a celebrity, and at the same time, her role is not, let's put it this way, it doesn't have that kind of theatrical impressiveness, that the sort of overt display of craft that tends to impress the Academy.
Now, on to the Best Actor. The nominees are, Alex?
The nominees are Woody Norman, Come On, Come On, Joaquin Phoenix, Come On, Come On, Cooper Hoffman, Licorice Pizza, Jeffrey Wright, The French Dispatch, and Oscar Isaac, The Card Counter. And Richard, the winner is?
The winner is Jeffrey Wright for The French Dispatch.
There is a particular sad beauty, well known to the companionless foreigner as he walks the streets of his adopted, preferably moonlit city, in my case, Henri, France. I have so often shared the day's glittering discoveries with no one at all.
Being in a Wes Anderson film is like dancing on eggshells while playing the trumpet. Combination of the emphatic and the exquisite. And Jeffrey Wright brings such a sense of delicacy and depth to this role, which is essentially based on a combination of James Baldwin and A.J. Liebling. He dominates the film. And it's only one of three major segments in the film, but his performance as an American expatriate, trying to find some margin of freedom as a black man and as a gay man in France when he couldn't find them in the United States, I find it deeply moving.
Richard, you have two nominees from the same movie, Come On, Come On, Woody Norman, who plays the kid in the movie, and Joaquin Phoenix. Tell us a little bit about the movie and what drew you to these performances.
Come On, Come On's a family melodrama. It's directed by Mike Mills. The story of a radio journalist, Joaquin Phoenix, who ends up taking temporary care of his young nephew, Woody Norman. It's essentially a mutual coming-of-age story. The child grows up through the uncle, but the uncle's world is vastly expanded in his connection to the young, rather idiosyncratic and ingenious child.
I got to say, Richard, if Woody Norman isn't the next Joaquin Phoenix or something, I'd be very surprised. It's an amazing thing.
That's what I think. Woody Norman gives one of the greatest child performances I've ever seen.
Now, Richard, the front runner for the Oscar in this category is Benedict Cumberbatch for Power of the Dog, the Jane Campion film. And that movie got more Oscar nominations than any other this year. We talked to her last week. Why didn't it receive a single Brody nomination?
Just shut out from the Brodies.
I guess the reason why, you know, Power of the Dog is not among my favorite films of the year is that despite its dramatic power, I feel its intentions are all up front, that it means what it means and it doesn't mean anything else. There are no loose ends. It's a kind of hermetic film, a very good one nonetheless, but not one of the best of the year.
Alex, what did you think of Power of the Dog?
I enjoyed The Power of the Dog. It is not my favorite Jane Campion movie. I actually agree with Richard's interpretation that the movie doesn't hold many secrets or surprises, that even though it's predicated on a big twist that you may see coming for a little bit in advance. However, if I may just be allowed to reach back to a previous Jane Campion movie, The Power of the Dog sent me back to Bright Star, her last feature film. Very different movie about Keats in the last year of his life falling in love with his neighbor, Fanny Braun. And I have not been able to recover from the death of Keats, which happened many years before my own life began after rewatching this movie. So I would just send everyone to see Bright Star, especially those who have not yet.
Which brings us to the evening's big prize, Best Picture. Alex, the nominees are?
The nominees for the Best Picture at the 2022 Brodies are Licorice Pizza, The French Dispatch, Zola, I Was a Simple Man, Come On, Come On, Passing, Petite Maman, The Woman Who Ran, The Disciple, and Being the Ricardos. And Richard, the winner is?
The winner is The French Dispatch.
Berenson's article, The Concrete Masterpiece.
Three dangling participles, two split infinitives, and nine spelling errors in the first sentence alone.
Some of those are intentional.
The Kremen's story, revisions to a manifesto.
We asked for 2,500 words, and she came in at 14,000, plus footnotes, endnotes, a glossary, and two epilogues.
It's one of her best.
Sazerac?
Impossible to fact check. He changes all the names and only writes about hobos, pimps, and junkies.
These are his people.
How about Roebuck Wright?
His door's locked, but I could hear the keys clacking.
Don't rush him.
The question is, who gets killed? There's one piece too many, even if we print another double issue, which we can't afford under any circumstances.
A message from the foreman. 1 hour to press.
David, it's basically a documentary, right?
That movie is a little too close to home.
The French Dispatch is Wes Anderson's most Andersonian film. He takes the idea of journalism and builds it out to an extraordinary level of complexity because he sees in every story the experience that's being reported on, the experience that is reported on, the life of the writer when writing, the life of the publication as the piece is being prepared. With all these levels of experience, he creates a film that is so complex, so kaleidoscopic, and at the same time, so inventive, so full of ideas about politics, about freedom, about history, that you really, I've said this before about Anderson, sometimes that you have to see it twice to see it once. You have to see this three times to see it once. It innovates at the level of the image, at the level of narrative. It's one of the most original films I have seen in years.
Right. Well, we're here for the Brodies, but let's spare a second to consider the Oscars. I have to confess, don't tell anybody, but I don't think I've been able to avoid falling asleep during the Oscars in years. It goes on forever. And this year, to the anger of many people, including, I think, Steven Spielberg, there's an attempt to make the ceremony more audience-friendly. Shorter speeches, fewer awards handed out during the broadcast of the big TV show. Alex, first, how do you feel about these changes? Are you excited to watch the Oscars this year?
I don't have the highest hopes for the Oscars, unfortunately. I think they have not really cracked the code yet. What I am looking forward to is Wanda Sykes as one of the hosts, along with Regina Hall and Amy Schumer. I wonder if this could inject some liveliness and actual edge into the Oscars, which would be a welcome thing.
I think basically the Oscars are a dinosaur on life support. Part of the reason why they cut these categories, supposedly, is that ABC, which broadcasts the ceremony, threatened to pull the ceremony, simply to cancel the contract. I actually think that would have been the best thing that could have happened to the Oscars. Because the reason why young people don't watch the Oscars is that they're on television. If the Oscars were forced to re-examine themselves, were forced to reinvent themselves by way of internet broadcasts, streaming, you could have a five-hour ceremony. It would be a hangout. You wouldn't sit and watch the whole thing necessarily from beginning to end, but you would have an amazing parade of personalities. You'd have comedy. You'd have what people who care about movies care about. You would have people in all the different categories. You would have somebody winning for, best costume design and saying something amazing. which very often happens.
Richard, Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Every year it's better and better. Thank you, David.
Good to see you and good to talk with you.
Richard Brody writes regularly on film at newyorker.com. Alexandra Schwartz covers culture of all kinds. That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards.
We had additional help this week from Andrew Dunn. Special thanks also to Maria Borkowski.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.